Hello, everybody. Season 2, episode 8. It's the end of a season, which was a bit of a... Yeah. Okay, I'm just going to say what I think off the bat, because obviously everyone's got strong opinions. If this wasn't the final episode of season, I think it would be really fucking good. And I think it does better on the rewatch. But now I've just got blue balls for 2 years, so... That's kind of where I'm at.
I
agree with what you said. Like, it felt better on the rewatch, and I want to hear Max's opinion.
I was going to say that it feels like if this was not the finale, if this was episode 8 of a 10 episode season, I would be like, okay, it's a mediocre episode. It's filler getting me to the next week.
Mm-hmm.
But as a season finale and the fact that we're going to have to wait a year and a half to 2 years, it's terrible. Just not good. And I did not think it held up on the rewatch. It got any better on the rewatch. I disagree on that.
So I have a dissenting
point. So I want to hear why you thought that or what you picked up the second time.
My dissenting opinion... Because this, again, I did when I initially watched it, again, had a feeling of like I all the way through, I was like, when are they going to get to it? When are they going to get to it? And had more build up and more build up. My dissenting opinion is because we are, again, the long gaps between seasons sucks.
Mm.
But if you think about an episode, like the last season, the last episode of Game of Thrones back in the day, they would have these massive build-up episodes so that people would tune back in for the next season. Like, you had these, like, the season where you have all of the build-up with Dany, and then, like, the end of the episode is her getting on a boat to finally come to Westeros. Like, there is those, like, it's meant to be, a final, like, end-of-season cliffhanger, is they're finally going into battle, what will it be? But I do also get the blue balls and the fact that, like, last season felt like this season's going to be the battle season.
Yeah.
Then this season ended with this season going to feel like a battle season. But equally, like, my brain, like, my justification is that Game of Thrones would have those episodes where at the end of the series, season, it would just build up a load so people would tune in next year.
Yeah.
With those Game of Thrones seasons, though, it's a 10-episode season, and episode 9 was always bananas.
Mm.
Yeah.
Episode 9 was always the, like, this where the shit hits the fan episode. This season did not have that. It had like moments that were great like that, like Rook's Rest and the Red Sewing, but it did not have like an episode that just like blew me away like that.
I get that argument. And again, I'm not going to deny the emotion of watching it for the first time. I was like, oh my God, it's the end of the series. I definitely felt it on rewatch. Like, I enjoyed the build up and I really enjoyed like the message of this episode. And like from a allegorical storytelling perspective, I really enjoyed this episode on the rewatch because I really like that. Like, there's some very deep themes and a lot of like answered questions that have been like hovering for a long time. I didn't hate it, I enjoyed it, but I do also get the frustration.
I think the thing is that we were kind of pinning a lot on the last, was it two or three episodes before this, so of a lot of stories, like, it basically what this episode did kind of do in isolation as one episode, not taking into account that it's the end of the series or what came before it, I actually think one of the better episodes of the seasons. However, we knew as we were watching the last couple of episodes that it all pivoted on the payoff, which we didn't get at all. It wasn't like it was a bad payoff. It was like we were full on blue balls. And I think that kind of, despite how this episode now stands on its own, the two episodes before it, basically, with the exception of a few scenes here and there, was might as well have not happened, really. And it could have been the case that this entire series could have been distilled into like 4 episodes. And I think if I'm going to start like making excuses and trying to sort of inject myself with some copium, I will say that it might be the case that there were financial issues that kind of led to this decision, because it did seem that HBO were making a lot of financial cuts lately. I don't know if it has anything to do with the writers' strike. We were told that apparently House of the Dragon was not really affected much by the writers' strike, but it might have perhaps had an effect in how much George R.R. Martin could have liaised with, was it Chapochnik or is the show? I've
And I mean,
completely.
in all
Ryan
fairness,
Condal.
That's the one, yeah.
like a series of a season of like good character work, but not much plot progression. I would prefer that if they can't have George R.R.'s input than a season where they're rushing to get plot done at the expense of the like logical kind of themes that would come from George R.R. stories. Like it's kind of it's the extreme opposite of what they did with the last couple of seasons of Game of Thrones, where they were rushing to get through as much plot as possible and completely neglected the characters and the allegory and the metaphor and like the slow building of tension and the character work. And
What
it's
was
the extreme opposite of that, where they're drawing out all of the character work by having almost a whole episode of Alicent having a swim. But at least that's not
That scene had no
the
purpose.
opposite side. Like I'd rather have Alicent having an existential crisis and a swim than Danny going mad in the course of one episode.
Okay, yes. That that
Yeah,
that
that's
that
fair.
and this feels a little bit, and this is what kind of makes me possibly feel like they can turn this around, right? This isn't all doom and
Yeah,
gloom, right?
it's not irredeemable. It's not wasn't terrible or anything. It was just
It's just a very
not what it
delayed.
should have been.
Yeah, it's not what it should have
Like
been.
it's a very slow build up. Like let's hope the climax is worth it for this level of I don't want to verge too much into sex metaphors, but it's gonna be
it's so weird for me because it's so unpredictable because what's coming next, I think like it's pretty obvious this is gonna be the Battle of the Gullet. You know, that's what should have been the finale of this season, I think. And it's changed so much because in that battle in the book, the Rhaenyra and Daemon's youngest children, the two boys, are like dragon riders in the battle. So that is completely it's gonna completely change. So I'm just like I have no idea what's going to happen. I gotta wait 2 years, so I don't know.
And the thing is, I can only imagine, right? It definitely feels like the battle, at least the Battle of the Gullet, would have been the thing to have ended on. However, it could just be the case that the money they would have spent on a battle, they spent on the sewing of the red sewing, which, honestly, I gotta be honest, and this is a shocker to everyone. I think the dragons are like my least favorite part of Game of Thrones, the whole Game of Thrones universe. Like, honest to
Oh, I
goodness,
love them.
I
I
don't get
love
me wrong, I
them.
do not dislike the dragons, and I do like what they've done with like Sheepstealer that we saw for the first time, of course, in this episode. That Sheepstealer looked amazing, absolutely. But I remember when they were talking about when there's a lot of discourse about them saying that they were putting the money into the dragons rather than the direwolves. I was thinking, actually, I think I'd rather have seen some really cool direwolves, but. That aside, I would have seen I would have seen like the red sewing being sort of rolled back a little bit in favor of a Battle of the Gullet, and I actually, and this is again going to be one that I think is going to be a contested opinion. I like the Tywin Lannister in Essos scene. It should have
Oh, I
been a bit.
enjoyed that. Bit hard to disagree on that one.
I think it
I
should have been
enjoyed
earlier in
it.
the season.
It was dumb fun. It was dumb fun. Yeah, I agree. It should have been earlier in the season. But again, given that the main complaint from season one was a lack of levity, it was really nice to see. And like also like season one, the lack of levity and the feeling of it being such a tiny universe season one of House of the Dragon was just the Targaryens in King's Landing and maybe a little bit of Dragonstone. It was
Yeah.
really nice to see some Bravosy fun beards and culture, and like it was fun. Again, I think I get the argument it should have been earlier in season, but I enjoyed it. Like, kind of like I will put out, again, if we're doing controversial opinions, I enjoyed it in the same way I enjoy watching Star Wars this episode, where like I enjoyed it for the experience of enjoying the plot happening. If I were to view it as part of the whole universe and the experience of them having to wait for 2 years, I would probably find it disappointing. But actually, the scenes and the stuff that happened, I really had a good time watching it.
Yeah, I think Game of Thrones has, and when I say Game of Thrones, I mean like the whole Game of Thrones, like universe and stuff. It has silly bits in it. Like it's always had silly bits in it. And definitely, I much prefer the silly levity over the dourness of season one. I get why people don't like it because it was silly, but we are talking fantasy. There's got to be a little bit of silliness
Yeah.
in fantasy, and I like the
I mean,
colourfulness of it
you're
as
right.
well. Like
Yeah, it was lovely.
everyone had different, like one of the things that is great about the Game of Thrones, the costumes. I've never seen, whenever I look at any kind of fantasy that's not Game of Thrones, maybe there might be some like Hollywood films that manage to get to the same level, but I can't think of any fantasy, medieval sort of fantasy, where the costumes were just as on point as Game of Thrones, where they actually look like things people would have lived in and worn in, and they don't look costumey at all. I like I when I think the opposite side of things. Have you ever seen Merlin?
Oh yeah, I
Yeah.
mean, also if we're talking about bad costumes from the BBC, I've got to give it a shout out to like the early 2000s Robin Hood, where we called
Yes.
it Top Shop. Like honestly, it was terrible. It was wonderful, but terrible. Also, that's the first show that me and my sister coined the term cotton famine for when usually men just decide to go shirtless randomly because why not? And
Oh,
so
cotton
now if
famine,
there's
yeah.
If there's ever like a historical drama where there's not really plot necessary upper chest nudity, we're like, oh, the cotton famine's hit again. What a shame. Oh no.
Yeah. I actually quite like Tywin Lannister actually as a character, and
Yeah, they've
honest to
made him
good.
quite like they've kicked the dog enough in this season, but I kind of like him because he's been so like just beaten down.
Or human, like he just, it's a very human element to
Yeah.
him. But also, here's the thing about I don't know who Tywin, the actor that plays Tywin is, right? I think it's the same as the guy who plays his brother Jason Lannister.
Yes.
But do you,
Same guy.
and you, I think you
He
might
also
also know
plays
this,
one of the
Hugh of the Vale.
cousins. Yeah, you're the well.
He's the thing is, I don't even think, like, is he like, he's the same actor that's played three different roles. Which has that actually even happened in Game of Thrones before? I know that there have been three different actors for the same role of the Mountain. I think that was three different actors, right? Yeah, there was, which really confused me when
What's
I
the name?
watched it.
At least three. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's
The Joffrey's younger brother. What's the name? Tommen. Tommen had
Tommen.
two actors. So
He did,
they
didn't
had
he?
two actors, and the actor who played Tommen when he was like a in a main role had played one of the Lannister cousins who was
Yeah,
kidnapped in Harrenhal back in the day. So they
by
really like
Karl Stark.
reusing Lannisters for
Daario
some reason.
Naharis recast, of
Yes, well,
course. He was
talking about
recast,
Daren
yeah.
Harris, they were too scared to give him a blue beard,
Wimps.
like in
Yeah,
the
that's
original Game of Thrones. So, like, I
ridiculous.
love, like, it was again. I keep saying how healing House of the Dragon is as a Game of Thrones, like the Song of Ice and Fire fan, or
Yeah.
House of the Dragon to actually like commit to the bit. And I love the fact that they actually committed to the bit when it came to blue beards and green beards and just having fun with Barossi. It's just nice. I liked it.
And they are pirates, like it's supposed to be piratey. I want piratey. I could have even have done with a hook for a hand somewhere just for pirate
Or
shits
a
and giggles,
parrot.
you know? Yeah, or a parrot. Well, we had a CGI monkey. That's kind, that's pretty piratey. That's, you know.
Yeah. I
I
did
yeah.
also like from a like, you know, like visual languages. So like there's a visual language to the costumes, and obviously there's a language to the music. This is my first time seeing, like we talk about like making new cultures with the costumes and making new cultures with like the set design and like combining different cultures into one. I am really impressed with the dance choreographer for this episode because the like pirate harlot dancer, she was not doing any steps of any dance that I recognize. Like it had some sort of like they managed to avoid the cliche of her being like a like belly dancer from the Middle East or from like the classic sort of harlot belly dancer. And they avoided a lot of the kind of Chinese dancing tropes where you have a brothel type situation and they have a lot of very specific like ways of dancing. And the fact that it immediately goes into like leaps and bounds, like from a visual, like from a dance language perspective, it was unique enough that I couldn't place it to a culture. And that's really nice. Like it's really nice when you see something like that where someone has, whoever the choreographer was, has specifically put an intention to try and make that a unique performance as fitting the Bravassi culture. And that's just it's like really tasty brain food. Like I can't really describe it. But it's like it's really lovely. It's really, really lovely. It's like when you recognize a choreographer by their choreography, not by them being in the credits. Or like recognizing a composer by a lilt. Or recognizing, I'm trying to think of a different kind of media that I could, like, I don't know, recognizing a chef by their food. I don't know. It's just that sort of like, it was a nice thing to experience as something that I have a not a great knowledge of, but enough of a knowledge to be like, I want to know who did that. It was very specific and really nice to see.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. They s obviously spent. This is weird, actually, thinking about it. The more I think about it, the weirder it gets. They clearly actually have spent maybe like not a huge amount on the writing side of the Essos stuff, but like the set design, the CGI monkey, all that kind of stuff. That was like that was probably like they could have stretched that out a few more episodes. They could have stretched that out over episodes, like and just had that as the. As the cut as a cutaway, B-roll thing instead of Damon and Damon and Damon and Damon. That there was far too much,
I mean, they could have saved some budget because I'm sure Matt Smith day rate is much more than any of those actors' day rates.
Yeah, absolutely,
100%.
yeah,
Like
and
in
he,
Harrenhal with Caraxes, like.
yeah, because it's like dragons are expensive. I bet Harrenhal's a fortune, and yeah, Matt Smith's expensive. It's.
And all
So,
those cameos.
yeah, it's a lot, it's a lot. So I think so I'm right to understand that Max, that's a very hard disagree on our
Yes,
positivity
Matt
towards the
did
Essos.
not enjoy this.
I can't be too much of a hater. It's,
It just wasn't your
I
cup of
think it
tea.
should have, it wasn't my cup of tea. It should have been, I think, spread out through more of the season because it just sort of felt tacked on at the end and rushed and all at once. Like Tylan just, gets there and wins them all over and with a mud wrestling match. I don't know. It felt a little bit like I get things can be silly and fun, but it just wasn't what I was looking for in this episode.
Did enjoy
So
the
I can't
fact that
be too big a hater.
there was great chemistry between the actors, but it wasn't sexual. Like, and the point where they made it sexual was then they immediately like did a nice little undercut. And I was just like, it was nice. Like it was efficient writing. I wouldn't necessarily say it was amazing writing, but it was very efficient to get those two characters who are very distinct, and they really try to make them very distinct because we know Tywin and we know what he's like, and we know like they put him in like heavy surcoat in like Mediterranean weather, sweating and insects and just wanting to have a bath. And then they paired him up with this very tall person. And I really like it, even if what it lacked in some of the nuance of the writing, it made up for in visual style, it made up for in natural chemistry. And I believe that like they have a sort of camaraderie. It didn't feel that rushed again. I feel like, as I said, it could have been spread out and probably should have been put in an earlier episode, particularly given how much travel is involved. It could have had this in the last episode and instead had Damon's like resolves in this episode or more Helena. We always wanted more Helena. I'm so glad we got Helena this episode.
Oh, yes, agree. Agree
Okay,
there.
should we talk about Helena? Because I have a lot to think
Let me
about.
scroll down to my section on her.
Okay. I don't know. I got to find a section with so she has just basically become, in my eyes, one of the most interesting characters right off the like.
Oh, yeah, she's just been in the background. I love
She's always been in the background. So the thing that I want to think about over the next 2 years, so they've given us something,
it.
is she Alice Rivers, or is she connected with Alice Rivers, or
Yeah,
like.
well, I brought that up because I thought the casting was really good because I thought the actresses looked very similar. And I
Well, I
genuinely
hadn't.
don't know whether or not the casting director thought of that or whether or not that's just my brain
Interesting
interpreting
theory.
faces.
Now, I've got a possible theory. It's kind of scrambled together. I've heard other people talk about it, so I'm sort of, it's semi-lifted, right? But you remember, do you know the scene where Alison and Helena are sitting down? Alison pours Helena some tea and says, "Drink it," and then Aemond comes in demanding that she rides the dragon. Now, some people have suggested that that's moon tea because Aemond might be taking Helena to bed to maybe get another heir. And that heir would possibly be, his like legacy. But at the same time, it, as I understand it, and I hope this is as I understand it, maybe some book spoiler here, that in Harrenhal, Aemond goes to Harrenhal and has a sexual liaison, maybe children, with Alice Rivers.
Yes.
But we
Yeah.
also see Alice Rivers wake like on the side of Damon's bed when he's there. Now, we don't know if anything has gone on there, or she just is just like creeping about in the night, because I mean, it either of those seem like they could happen. So I feel like this is all connected in a very magical way, where it's like Aemond, Daemon, swallowed up in the God's Eye, with like Helena and Alice Rivers being the, I don't know, some sort of mystical link in there.
I don't think they're
Yeah.
the same person, but I definitely view them like I don't know whether or not you guys have ever played the Shadow or Mordor game,
No.
where they basically made Shelob a sexy lady so that she could be a mirror image of Galadriel, which is a really dumb way of doing that plot. I do think Helena and Alice represent opposite sides of the same coin, and I
Quite
think
possible,
they're
yeah.
like a yin and yang dynamic, where one of them's a dragon dreamer and one of them's a green dreamer. They're similar in kind of appearance. I definitely think that I was spoiled for Aemond having a relationship with Alice, and obviously he has quite obviously coveted an interest in Helena for a while, and again the casting of the actresses looking somewhat similar. Like I feel like there is parallels to draw, and it might be part of the setup for that instigating of the relationship because they are like the white head and the dark head, like a sort of
Ice and
like
fire type
Helena
thing.
seems to be stuck in a childhood sort of scenario where Alice seems wise beyond her years, dragon dreams versus green dreams. Like there's definitely, I don't think, again, to say they're the same person is to definitely undercut a lot of what could be going on there. But I really like the allegory speaks for itself.
Well, I mean, I haven't developed any kind of full theory as of yet. I think I've got 2 years. I'm going to work on. I'm going to try and like weave this out because
Rework.
it's not really like a book thing. I think this would be something similar to the show. But one thing about this show that they do seem to be a little bit more interested in that the book, Blood and Fire. Is it? Hang on a minute. What is it called? Did I get it
Iron
right?
blood.
Fire and Blood.
Iron
That's
blood.
it. The is that they seem to want to link this into the main Game of Thrones plot a little bit more than Fire and Blood. Now, what it could be the case, and this might be interesting, could be that when we saw Aemon's vision, we saw the Three-Eyed Raven slash Blood Raven slash Brynden Rivers in a much younger state. It could be the case that now Brynden Rivers slash the Blood Raven is not happening. Has not happened yet, so that was a future vision. However, we do
Yes,
know
many generations after this. Well, not
many
many, like
generations.
3 or 4 generations after this.
Yeah, I would say 3 or 4 is many generations, but yeah, like yeah, it's much closer to Game of Thrones than it is to House of the Dragon. However, it could be the case that well, first of all, I think that they that was that that specific bit of the vision was a hook in to the Duncan Egg story that we're going to be getting next year. So we've got some Game of Thrones action next year. So it's not a whole 2 years Blue Bull scenario. And
That's true. I'm more
apparently,
looking forward to that at this point than I am to season three, honestly.
kind
But we can
of,
talk about that later, maybe.
yeah.
No, I'm excited for season three.
Well, the thing
I'm
is,
excited for season three, but this I'm more excited for. Duncan Egg.
this is gonna be interesting,
Hedgehog.
but I think that bit with the Blood Raven might just be a bit of a teaser for Duncan Egg. However, it could be the case that Alys Rivers Helaena could be the genesis of the Three-Eyed Raven, where they kind of meld together or they are part of the same force but different, like in the same way that Bran and Three-Eyed Raven were like different and then they kind of came together. So I don't know, maybe there's something going on there, but I do feel that Damon's why do Matt Damon that's okay, I don't know where
Damon,
it's
have we not drawn that connection?
That's so funny.
how
Believe that's not just a standard meme. Oh my gosh. Like, that should be a cross-border meme.
So Damon's final like looking into the Weirwood, that could have taken the place of like two of his previous like long scenes from previously. So he had too much screen time and Helena did not have enough screen time. And I think again this would have been one that could have been done earlier. That being said, I really liked how that scene how that line actually ended up playing out with Damon sort of realizing that he doesn't want and actually it does tie in with the scene with Viserys. I think we saw it last week where he's like, "Do you really want the crown? It crushes everyone who wears it." And to me, that was almost the point in which he decided that he was not going to usurp Rhaenyra. And I feel that some of this was just retreading that ground, albeit both scenes were good. But I kind of feel like, well, I thought he was already like that, yesterday's scene kind of realized that it made him realize that he didn't want to be king. He just wanted to be the top dog or whatever it was. Like it was ego, but it was nothing more. And I feel like that bit sort of trod over it a little bit more. But that being said, I love the rallying of the armies. I love when Rhaenyra was flying in with Adam and you saw Harren, like all of Harrenhal, how big it was, and you saw the size of the
I
armies
loved
around it.
the shot of Harrenhal from the outside. Was awesome. Just get that sense of scale. I really enjoy, like, I will say, going from my point about Alison having a long bath, like the Daemon, they wanted to have a Daemon arc where he came to terms with, actually, I can push aside my ego and support Rhaenyra. And they wanted that arc to last the whole season. and they wanted to keep him on screen and last the whole season. And again, if we're going with the theory that they couldn't get George R.R. because of the writers' strike,
Or Duncan Egg or any there's
or whatever, like if they
Into
couldn't
winter.
progress the plot, like I'm okay with a very slow character piece. And things with character pieces, particularly when you're trying to impose upon a character development, like changing his attitude, like to do that rushed would be a disservice to the character. I do, it was a bit drawn out, but when you have those changing attitudes character arcs, which are internal, put into an external format so it's visual and interesting to watch, it does come with like multiple tiers. It's not just, oh, I saw one thing and my entire mental mindset has changed and I want to support Rhaenyra now. Like it comes with stages, and coming to terms with the fact that he manipulated her as a child, coming into that he makes messes and she has to clean up, like the progression of the relationship with his brother, like the idea that he was fleeing from his responsibilities and all of this stuff. I have hiccups. Terrible for a podcast to have hiccups. I get it. Again, it was drawn out, but having gotten to the end of that arc, I would prefer a whole season of someone slowly coming to terms with a change in their personality and a change in their primary motivations than to have a one episode turning mad.
One of the things I quite liked about the scenes at Harrenhal were that whenever there was a wide shot of Harrenhal, you saw the God's Eye, and it looked we've only seen it at a distance, but it looks really cool. And I do hope we get to see like the God's Eye at some point in the future, which I think we do because it is where Aemond and Daemon have their final showdown. So,
Well, oh yeah, Helena gives the biggest spoiler she drops the
of all
spoiler, doesn't
time. Like, if you don't know that that's a spoil, because I don't think the God's Eye has been specifically mentioned in the TV show. So if somehow you're watching just the TV show and have avoided all spoilers, then you will have the conclusion of the God's Eye being like, oh shit, this is where he's gonna go die, fuck. But like if you have any tier of spoils, which I have been vaguely trying to avoid, but like I knew about the God's Eye. She's potentially, if we keep on bringing up like who's the narrator of the story, maybe Helena is the ultimate narrator of Us the Dragon. Like that's
Oh,
why
but
House of the Dragon has got such good
I'm
character
starting
aspects.
to believe that more. Now, this episode gives so much evidence
Also,
that.
we get given another massive spoiler. Rhaenyra sits on the throne again. Like,
I mean, maybe.
now,
Is that a future vision or is
if
that
he
a.
could see 200 years into the future in Daenerys,
Yeah, and he
Also,
sees
they could
him.
get Millie Alcock to come back, but they couldn't actually get they couldn't
Oh,
get actually
Emilia
Dany to come
Clarke.
back.
Yeah.
They couldn't get Emilia Clarke to come back and
Millie
be naked
Clarke.
again.
She's expensive, right? Like, as well.
I know,
She's
she's
probably
expensive and
quite.
she's busy.
But here's the thing that I do think is quite interesting. Now, I don't know. I'm sure I might have known at one point, but I've since forgotten the succession for how it goes down. Because, so I'm kind of working from Helena spoilers and Alice Rivers spoilers from the show. But it does kind of, I think, as it lays out, Rhaenyra's going to come at the very beginning of next season, maybe even not the very beginning, but somewhat at the beginning of next season, take the Iron Throne. But Aegon with Larys has now sodded off. He might come back and he might sit on the throne. There might be more because Helena does say that Aegon will be king again, but he's fucked off. So he's got to come back and be king again. But also, we've got a vision that says that Rhaenyra is going to be queen. So, Do they get married? No, that doesn't. I don't
I
know.
mean,
Like,
incest.
well,
Why not?
Aegon's cock is obliterated.
Yeah.
That's one of the best lines of
I mean,
the
to bring up like a penis thing and really like properly put a visual in the minds of anyone who has a penis, I am sorry on behalf of you guys, the show writers,
Yeah.
you
Oh, we
know
had it
how to form
coming.
an image.
Yeah, that was
Clearly,
actually
not going to have it coming anymore.
he like, let's be honest, that's the gods putting an end to his fucking shit, really, isn't it?
Like they're definitely putting an end to his fucking.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's a little bit of a divine punishment. However, I actually thought this scene was really good as well with him and Larys. And I like that they've like, because of course famously Tyrion in Game of Thrones, when he got his scar at the Battle of Blackwater, they really prettied it up for TV. Whereas, as
Oh,
I
they,
understand it,
yeah.
in the books, like a big just chunk of his face and nose were cut off. Now, admittedly, I
Yeah.
don't know how that would have played into the budget with prosthetics and makeup and all that kind of stuff. Maybe
They
they
would have
could have
had to
done
do
it.
digital work to do the full work, otherwise it would look
Yeah,
wonky.
if they really went all the way with the nose, they would have to have like CGI constantly on his
But
face.
I do like the I do like how the makeup for Aegon comes out. I do like the fact that like I like his like the way that he portrays the what's the word I'm thinking of, like the nihilism of it all, the like what's the point, the fatalism, you know, like it's just like
Yeah.
what's the point of all this, like it's just a spiral of despair to him at this point. I don't have a cock, no one likes me, I'm likely to get killed by my brother, like he truly feels at his lowest
Yeah,
point.
his brother and his sister both want him dead. Woof, woof.
Yeah, and it's like and Larys is like his only friend, and I kind of do kind of feel like Larys actually like empathizes with Aegon a lot on a personal level as well as a political level. So, and also let's be
He
honest,
empathizes with him now.
yeah, now, yeah.
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 There was very little empathy before, other than, oh, you poor moron.
Exactly. And so what I would be interested in seeing in maybe season three would be a little bit of like, you know how we saw like the Varys and Tyrion roadshow, where like they would do cutaway scenes that would just be a little bit of banter. I think that would work really well between Larys and Aegon, to be honest. I think Aegon has nailed his role in this particular season.
Oh my God,
So,
yeah, he's, I think he's, he might be the MVP of the season for me.
oh, the MVP. No, the MVP for the
Ooh.
season is Simon Strong. Sir Simon
Oh,
Strong,
okay,
sorry. There's a
he's
great
up
little
there.
scene. And his outfit was amazing, and I'm glad I'm not the only one who saw it, or sort of thought that. But the bit where
I
everyone,
mean, Simon Strong's basically playing Parent Trap.
he kind of, yeah. And it's
Yeah.
like, I love the little bit where, like, Daemon's rallying the troops, and like Simon Strong is just there in the background going, it's all
Yeah,
worked out in the
I
end.
saw
It's
that.
okay. There will be
I also
Christmas after
liked
all.
what's he called? What was the guy that Rhaenyra sent away because he was being a
Oh,
tosser
Broom.
to go
Is it
deal with
Alistair Broom?
Broom, like sneaking back out through the crowd during that speech and being like, I'm
Yeah.
out!
I'm out.
Fuck!
Oh,
Shit!
shit.
Wolf!
I overplayed my hand. Oh, dear. Yeah.
Yeah,
But
also, did you guys watch with subtitles or did you guys watch without subtitles?
didn't watch for
With.
subtitles. Should I
So,
do this
in
something?
the scene where he meets with Daemon in the Godswood, and Daemon's like, oh, you
Yes.
can. I didn't hear it because I was watching my laptop, and my audio on my laptop's not amazing. And he, like whispering voice, traitor.
Yeah, I
And
did.
I was like, uh-oh, okay,
Yeah.
cool, yep.
Okay.
The Godswood does not like him.
It doesn't. But also, do we know what that hoofed creature was that was there as.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Now there are theories going around. One of them being that this is how they're depicting the Children of the Forest in House of the Dragon. And it might be the case that like they live on the God's Eye, and that was what, you know, that was what they looked like. It could have something to do with the goat. It could be like that goat is a manifestation of.
Yeah, I was thinking maybe it was something to do with like Heron, Black Heron, Harren, like
Oh
the
yeah.
spirit of the house of Harrenhal. Or like my brain did briefly think it was a man with a wolf's head, which made me think it might be a future vision of Robb Stark. But then I rewatched and it's more antlers, but it's growling. Like it like, and it's literally what maybe 20, like 10 frames.
Yeah.
Like I went back to it about 10 times to get another look at it, and I couldn't get anything clear. I need to watch it on like my bigger TV, I think. Like I couldn't crack it. It was cool. I liked it. It was
Yeah.
spooky.
It was really good. I'm just trying to find it now on
What's the time code? Because I think I missed that completely.
Okay, so the time
It
code
was literally like, I
37
said,
minutes
like
and four
10 frames.
seconds.
So it's when she's leading Daemon out into the Godswood, and as she approaches the tree, there is literally a shot where a creature just literally walks up towards the tree, and then in the next shot, it's gone.
Okay, yeah. I forgot about it. I didn't notice it the first time. I forgot about it. Yeah,
I literally did
I
a
have
double
no
take
idea
the
what that
first
is.
time. Like it's just cool and spooky. I like it. I
It's a
like it so
person
much.
with antlers and hooves. Maybe this is interesting, and maybe this is like an allusion to, isn't there an Essos religion that worships a goat? Oh, that's not a goat though. That's clearly antlers.
It's clearly antlers, yeah. So
It's
it
a
could be something
deer
to do
or
with
deer person.
Baratheons or the like. If we're talking about like the first men, it could be like just like a vision of the old gods. Like it could be literally a depiction of the old gods, like
Yeah, I.
incarnate. I mean, like maybe like the old gods is very kind of druidic-y, nature-y, pagan-y. So I wouldn't put it past it being a sort of, if you're going with more classic, non House of the Dragon chronology, then you could go with like the Green Man type vibes.
Yeah.
But it's spooky and I like it.
I
It
mean,
was definitely like a what was that moment?
yeah, it was perfectly done, and it looks back at him and then just disappears.
You just can't get like it was a really good like low level illusion double take. A hallucination double take, like you know, when you see something out the corner of your eye when you're driving and you're like, oh, was that a deer? And then you're not sure, was it a hedge? Was it a person? Like, it was like a really, like, as someone who gets that quite a lot when I'm tired of driving, and I'm like, what was that? It was good.
Yeah, I think my guess right now is Children of the Forest. I think that's a child of the forest, and maybe I don't think they were hoofed in the Game of Thrones, but like the throne was
They
different.
were barefoot.
Although, do you know what I think would be really cool? Would be if Rhaenyra, when she took if slash when she takes the throne, she gets rid of the extra swords and like cuts it back a little bit, and that sort of explains why the Game of Thrones is a little bit more of a sort of a reduced chair, because there's a lot of swords there. Like it's a bit like I get it and it's
It's a
cool.
bit of a hazard. Like, you know, if my dad died of a horrible, crippling disease, probably billed from metal toxicity from having horrible tetanus, yeah, I'd clear some of the hazardous swords from my dining room.
And it's still not quite what you see, what the books are supposed to be, where it's tall. It's still just more swordy. So, and Peter Baelish in Game of Thrones does remark that it's too, you know, it's not even 200 swords. So, I can understand there being a canonical reason as to why they reduced the swords over time. I don't know if it's just a different storytelling or whether or not it's a plot reason. And it could be the case with the Children of the Forest. It might be the case that this is just what the Children of the Forest look like under Ryan Condal's directorship. And maybe
Well,
because you don't see them as much, like in the same way that you see like Leaf in Game of Thrones, maybe it makes them a little bit look a little bit more special. When you can hear, like, because it's the the make it's the hoof sounds that really sort of resonated with me. That made me that really gave an edge of the weirdness to it. So maybe it was just they wanted something that's a little bit more animalistic rather than human, just to like add to the mystery, perhaps.
What were you gonna say, Max?
I was gonna say, yeah, I definitely think it has something to do with the Children of the Forest or the First Men or that realm of magic and mysticism.
I feel like it would be a cool way of doing, like, if we're saying this is a time, a land of myth and a time of magic, we already referenced Merlin once already this forecast. But if we're saying this is a more magical time, and this is the time where green seers have more powers, and where dragon dreamers have more powers, and black candles can still be lit, maybe there are other depictions within the kind of family of the green seers, within the family of the Children of the Forest. So who's to say the Children of the Forest don't ride on, you know, fawns or, you know, satyrs, like those sort of things? Who's to say that there's not like, it kind of looked like, have either of you guys played Witcher 3?
No.
There's the Leshens, which are like tree spirits, which have like massive antlers and giant like claws, and they're fucking terrifying. If you come across them in the middle of a wood while running through the open world of Witcher 3, and you come across a Leshen, holy fuck, they're terrifying. And it gave very like Leshen vibes. If you were to Google Witcher 3 Leshen, you'll see what I mean. It was very much that sort of like tree spirit, nature spirit vibe for me, which again, if the answer never comes, I'm actually okay with that. Unlike the lot of the Daemon stuff, where the resolve seems to be Alice wanted to enforce some character development on him. That seems to be the reason for this extended hallucinatory period. It's nice to have a resolve to that, like an answer to that is Alice wanted him to have character development. Good, fine, done. Like, I'm okay with this creature never having an answer to it. Like, I'm okay with it being a spooky, mysterious tree something.
Totally. I you know, like, it's interesting to see the mystery. What would be kind of interesting is if Aemond and Daemon get swallowed up in the God's Eye, and like, because as I understand it, their bodies are never found. What if they become part of the Three-Eyed Raven collective and just end up being, you know, eaten alive by the trees or whatever, or like, I don't know, made into the thing, and they just like disintegrate in the God's Eye and are a part of the Three-Eyed Raven's,
they become mulch
box set. Yeah, mulch. It's just a big mulching operation, isn't it? But I really, really, really liked the transition from Daemon to, or Helena from the vision.
Into
Helena the Helena into in King's Landing. Like, it's just like that was the spookiness of it. Oh, also one thing that I thought was interesting, I'm gonna try and find the timestamp for it.
I enjoyed the fact that when Aemond comes and talks to Helena as she's looking out over into the sky, that he says, come with me to Harren Hall, and she kind of just, there's a very, like, I don't know if she even reacts, but the fact that she says, come, like, he says, come with me to Harren Hall, and there's just that, like, I was just there, dude, type vibe. And, like, she just knows. I love, like, she just knows. Like, it's not a question of, like, your, like, when he's, you know, his defense is, you know, that is traitorous talk. And she doesn't need to say, like, it's the truth. And she doesn't need to say, I'm not a traitor. Like, she just has authority of, like, she has absolute authority on the given truth.
Yeah.
Like, she doesn't need to defend herself.
Yeah, I'm just trying to like look through the frames to see if there's the bit where someone is walking through a battlefield with a lot of corpses, treading through puddles of blood, And then the foot
See, I
trips.
thought it flipped through, and then you have Damon sinking into like the black abyss. So I thought that was Damon.
It
But there is a
certainly
dead
could be.
dragon.
There's
Because
a dead
I
dragon.
assumed that was like part of his transition into the deep dream state, or the deep vision state. So it was him walking through bodies, and there was a dead dragon, and then he falls into nothing, and then it's time space.
I
Yeah,
can't
I really
recognize.
liked that he was a believer. Like, he's gone from being like a proper like cynic, to being like, okay, we do this. And I like the fact that that was one of the things that I think there was a musical ping or something to do with Rhaenyra's acting, in Valyrian, when she says, "You sound like my father," and like it was just like that immediate like. Okay, we're back on the same page. It may not last, as is often the case with toxic relationships, but I've got the feeling this is the start of a new honeymoon
Oh,
period for
this
them,
is
where they're briefly on the same page.
this
I
has
don't know
changed
if it will
Damon.
last.
Yeah, no, it will. I it will last until Damon dies. Like I think this is like, could be wrong, but I think this is almost like solidifying up Damon's final character form in terms of he's always been relatively egotistical, self-centered, self-serving, but then he kind of realizes what it's all for, and he kind of, I don't know, I feel this is the permanent
I'm hoping it's permanent. To have spent
change.
this much screen time on it, it would be, but
They
I
better
am
be permanent, yeah.
hesitant.
I'm just trying to work out with the dead, who, if the dead dragon is like one of the Game of Thrones dragons, whether this is a flash forward to the Long Night, or whether and the feat that you're seeing is Jon Snow perhaps, or whether or not it's Daemon walking through maybe one of the battles in Dance of the Dragons.
I mean, it could be, why not both? Because theoretically, obviously, Jon Snow is a descendant, I would assume, potentially of some part of the bloodline. So it could be
Like
he's
it.
walking in another person's shoes, literally.
Yeah, absolutely.
I haven't actually looked at the screenshot of that. If it's Viserion, who was, I think Viserion was the one who got turned into an ice white dragon, then half of his face is missing.
Half his face
So
is
can you see
missing.
that? The ice dragon, like half of his face was missing at the point of the Battle of the Long Night. So if it is Viserion, you might be able to see that in the shot.
That's. I don't think he looks. I don't think so. I think.
I mean, I just assumed that was a metaphor for, fire and blood and the end of the Targaryen line. Because he
And there's
does
all.
say when he's describing his revelation that we won't survive it, but somehow we have to.
Yeah, I mean, there is also literal fire and blood in that shot. I think I'm seeing a wing behind the dragon, so I think it might look like, I think it might look like there are multiple dragons, by which it would seem that this is a Dance of a Dragon scene.
I think
It's
it's more
very faint.
allegorical than
Or
literal.
yeah, allegory. It's yeah.
It looks to me, yeah, there's like two or three dragons in the scene, so it's probably meant to be the Dance of the Dragons or the Dying of the Dragons.
But all in all, actually, I do like that we did see more of Harrenhal. Maybe too much of Harrenhal, depending on who you ask. But it was an in it's one of the most interesting castles in Westeros, and I feel that even in Game of Thrones, we only ever saw corners of it, and
I mean, we've said
this
all the
was.
way through this very drawn out Daemon arc that the conclusion, if the conclusion does it well, it will make the build up worth it. And I am currently satisfied. I think I want to rewatch the whole series in full. I want to do like a marathon day where I watch the entire of season 2, and maybe even the whole of season 1 as well. I'll be up for a full binge. and see whether or not when you're watching it in direct succession, whether or not it feels less drawn out, with the conclusion in mind.
But to me, this
Because
is only half a conclusion. The other half of him is actually going into battle and actually, like the
actually
sort of
doing the business.
as he actually doing the business. So I feel like, and this is the thing about this episode that was the most frustrating, is that like every resolution was a resolution, but, and I know that this is like that's kind of par for the course for Game of Thrones somewhat, but I don't know. I do kind of feel like it felt a little bit just, I don't know,
Yeah,
like.
I get it. I get it. I understand the feeling, although I really, as I said, I really enjoyed this episode for what it was. But yeah, I think like little things like the conversation that he has in Old Valyrian with Rhaenyra was just, it was really charming and like a little bit like, okay, we've both matured, we've both changed a little bit, but then he was just that little bit like, yeah, that little weird posture moment where he was like, I've tried. Like, she's like, leave me again at your peril. And he's like, I've tried to get away from you. I can't. Like, and it was nice. And like, I want to believe in their relationship. And it kind of, it made me believe in their relationship a bit. I do have some doubts still. But it seemed like it was just in again, I want to rewatch this season again, but in the same way that Rhaenys and Corlys had their like cute flirtations, and he joked about like sometimes he quite enjoys a lady on top type thing. Like I think Daemon's finally like, I can get behind this. Like I can get behind having a more like maybe sometimes bowing before your wife is actually none too shabby.
I think he's just genuinely been humbled. Like he understands he's not
Yeah,
all he ever
I
thought he
think.
was. Or like that even if he is everything he ever thinks he is, there's so much bigger that he is insignificant in the, he is not the player of the game, he is a piece on the board. I think
The piece on the
that's all
board, he's
that's
part of the story, not the hero of the story.
that's lit
He
like yeah,
knows
they
his
basically
part.
told us, they just told us what his
Yeah.
revolution straight to us really, I guess.
Well, like the if there was a metaphor for this particular episode, it was that it's all part of a story, and like so many threads fall into if you think of it as part of like the extended Game of Thrones story, and you think about also like different interpretations of history and like how people are perceived when they become a story or when they become a myth or when they become part of the history books, like that's repeated all the way through this episode, where you have things like Cole and his handkerchief. Like, prizing after his queen is very like knightly valor, but we know that he's not particularly a knightly valor character. But how will he be remembered by history? He might be remembered as the White Knight who was, like, and Alicent saying that she's happy to be, like, people will see her as they see her. She's okay to be the villain if it means she can get things done or be free or live free. Like, and the idea of just being a part of. Like, and also, like, the idea that Helena says the word "tis just a story" in relationship to Daemon's vision of the Song of Ice and Fire, which obviously could end up being Daenerys, being Azor Ahai. That's who we saw in his vision. Or it could be that the vision is bullshit because we know that Arya is gonna be the Azor Ahai, and
That's what I was
maybe the
thinking the whole
story is
time.
false. The story, like, tis just a story. It's something that, like, the history books tell us is true, but it's not. And so the idea that he's wasting his time on this allegory, this vision, this dream, Aegon's dream, that is false. Or like, George R.R. loves his misinterpretation of prophecies. He adores that as a subplot. So the idea that the Song of Ice and Fire is just a story that you pass down, and all these characters are just archetypes, like it was juicy, and I loved it.
I'm willing to go out on the limb and say that Arya still is not the prince that was promised. I wish they made it Theon, to be honest, because that would have been a bait and switch that would have really been interesting. I still think that
fun.
It's either like Jon Snow and Daenerys and everyone else, or it's, I mean, with this in mind, I'm fine to say
There's
that
the
it's
friends you
Daenerys.
made along the way.
It's the friends you made along the way. Like, I mean, maybe there was no one prince that was promised. Maybe it was Jon Snow. Maybe it was Daenerys. It's either Jon Snow or Daenerys, right? And I think this vision probably points to Daenerys, right? Although that being said, it doesn't necessarily say so, because it could just be that she was just a key person in the same way that Bloodraven was there in that vision. It could be that Bloodraven is
Yeah,
the prince that was promised, for all we know.
or it could be that the star itself, like it had the shooting star, like the meteor that went over at the birth of the dragons. Like it could be that the star itself is part of it. Who knows?
Actually,
But
why
yeah.
don't we hear more about the Bran being the prince that was promised?
Because Bran
Because
is a robot that no one cares about.
Bran the Boring.
Bran the
Yeah,
Boring, but
Bran became the king. Like,
yeah,
Dorian got
his
enough
mission
initiative.
stopped right before Bran the Boring
But the thing
became
is,
the king.
it's if it's Bloodraven that is basically inhabiting Bran's body, then I think that then you can perhaps maybe say, and because he is, in a wheelchair, like the sword, the cat's paw dagger, is it's the sword, but obviously someone else would wield it. So I don't know, like
So you're
Bran
saying
kind.
Arya is the sword, the flaming sword that was forged in the fire of sacrifice,
That
which was
is maybe.
wielded by Azor Ahai to kill the Night's King.
That would be, yeah, something in that ballpark. I mean, obviously, this being Game of Thrones, the prophecy is fluffy and not, doesn't really have defined edges or anything like that. But yeah, like Bran is the bait, so that's part of killing the Night King, right? He's the one that
I
Night
mean,
King's after. He's.
I just enjoy the idea that if Helena is kind of like Helen of Troy, and she sees the abject truth to things, and no one believes her, she sees what is actually true. I really love the idea that she looks into Daemon's vision via the tree, which is also a shared prophecy of Azor Ahai, and what she sees is like, this is bullshit. This is just a story that we tell ourselves to get through the day. Like, and I would love if that's kind of the interpretation where actually, because she's seeing the real truth of the matter, that she actually is like, this is not how it will come to be. And it just again, it like so much of the allegory of this season makes my brain like gobble it up. Like
Although
it's like a really tasty meal or a fragrant wine.
I just don't like being reminded of Game of Thrones season 8, and
I'm
that's what this did for
sorry.
me, and I don't know,
I'm sorry.
I was not really down with it,
I
but
so what one thing I did find that was quite interesting, going back to House of Dragon then, is after the vision, right, you see Helena, I don't know what direction she's facing out at, because there would have been some interesting thoughts if she, for example, was in the Godswood, where she could connect with Daemon because they're both at Weirwood Trees, right? Now, it might be the case that Helena is a dragon dreamer rather than a green seer. Whether or not they're the same thing, whether or not they're interoperable, or who knows? She doesn't look like she's not. She's not got like a magic candle, but she does look like she could be looking over, obviously too far away to see eye to eye, but looking over possibly towards Harrenhal. I don't know. There's very little ever like very little clues as to what direction she's facing.
Yeah, I don't know whether or not that even really matters if she's seeing through space-time. I did enjoy the fact that in the previous scene with Alicent, she said to Daemon, to Aegon, "I'm going to bed. I'm just going to bed." And like we're talking about Dreamfire, we're talking about dragon dreams, we're talking about green dreams. Like she might have been going to her bedroom, but maybe she dreamed her connection or like was asleep because she was obviously in her nightgown. It was late at night. Like maybe she'd fallen asleep and slept, walked her way out into the tower, and then had just woken up at the point that Aegon came in, and she'd been dragon dreaming. I am vaguely spoiled for her ending. And so when I saw her atop the tower with the crumbling wall and no good safety on top of that tower, I did get a little nervous that I'd misinterpreted the timeline.
My suspicion is that they are going to change Helena's ending.
Well, so far, like obviously they said by this point in the story, like she's broken, her brain is like cracked, and she's just kind of like sweet and crazy. And so far she seems pretty like again that could be like a classic like the story that the small folks tell is the queen went crazy after the death of her children. But obviously they don't know her. So I enjoy the fact that like that's obviously that can be put up to the showrunners how they interpret that. But she does at the moment seem pretty damn compos mentis, perhaps even more so than she was in previous seasons. She's having very direct conversations with Alicent about like why the commoners hate us. I wouldn't put it past like it was again. Alicent said like not like this. There's no point. Like, what will be worth protecting if her mind is broken? And so I think Alicent's very aware of how trauma builds up, and like traumatic weight. And Helena's been through quite a lot. I think they'll change her ending, but I think they'll change it. Like she again, it's not going to be she goes mad and just jumps off the tower.
I know that would be
But
too
it'll be too operatic.
kind of, yeah, I guess so. Like, I reckon that it could be. I'm again, I'm only just wildly shooting from the hip on this one, but it could be the case that she goes missing or runs away, and the reason she people think she killed herself is because maybe a certain Orwyle was covering up for her. Because Orwyle, as we know, he might also be an MVP. I'm really liking Orwyle in terms of his character, even though he's a very in the background kind of character. That guy, I don't know, like, he is a spy master, because he if he can get
Absolutely.
like he's he because he presumably
He
like
helped smuggle
helped
Alicent out.
he must have helped
He
with Aegon, right?
definitely. Well, the thing is, he like Aegon was smuggled out in the Raven cart. Do you guys notice that? The cart that they were being smuggled out in is the Raven cart, and who manages the Ravens? The
The
Maester.
mace does.
So Orwyle definitely was responsible for smuggling Aegon out of the city, 100%. There is no like lack of clarity there. They were in the Raven cart. Like the cart that was leaving the city was the Maester's Raven cart. So probably they're going out via Old Town to get to wherever they're going. So potentially that could be a way of introducing other characters by and by, if they're sending the Ravens out to Old Town or vice versa. But yeah, it's in the Raven cart. So 100%, it was Orwyle was responsible for that smuggling.
Oh man.
I was gonna say we do not know for sure that Helena kills herself. That's the theory of the Maesters writing the book based off of the evidence and the perspective that they have. They even mentioned that, the small folk and a lot of people thought that Rhaenyra it was the one that, is responsible for her death in the end, and that
I mean, it
so
could be
m
if they
maybe
think
they could
Rhaenyra.
take her death,
Yeah, well, if they
Who
think
knows?
Rhaenyra was responsible in the same way that Rhaenyra was responsible for the death of Laenor, the hiding of Laenor's death could be foreshadowing her potentially rescuing Helena. Because she's always defended Helena. She's always treated her like the younger sister that she is. She's the baby sister she always wanted.
But
She was.
it could be the case, and I again this is a bit wild, but it could be that Helena is like Bloodraven 0.1. You know, she's the precursor to the Three-Eyed Raven, maybe. You know, she might be the thing that starts it. Like, I'm pretty, like, it's weird, right, to think, right, obviously a guy in a tree is weird, but like, he didn't just go up there of his own volition, sit in a tree and wait for it to grow around him. There's obviously like some kind of old magic. It comes from somewhere, right? So it could be the case that Helena is a very is part of that earlier process in some way, shape, or form. She might be an earlier part of the Three-Eyed Raven. She might be like a do a Bran or something like that.
If any character so far in this series deserves a happy ending, it's Helena. So I really hope she doesn't become a tree person. I hope, like, maybe, like, obviously, I am slightly spoiled for what happens with her children. So, like, if she, like, runs off and lives out in the Godswood for the rest of her life, just chilling with the Green Seers, I'd be happy with that. Like, you know, I don't want to have a sad ending for her. Because that'll be a real bummer.
She could be like the tree person of the God's Eye for all we know, or something, you know, like it. But one thing, actually, speaking of spoilers, is I know Laris's ending, and I do happen to know that it does take place, I think, in King's Landing, or in certainly in Westeros. So
I think in King's Landing, yeah.
I would assume King's Landing, unless I'm missing a point. So my suspicion, or my so I kind of know from that Aegon's probably gonna come back, and also Helena did say so. I
He'll come back and sit on a wooden throne.
But I hope, yeah, I'm looking forward to more scenes. One scene that I really did quite enjoy, I'm just gonna try and find it now. Oh, I had it a moment ago. It was the one with Kristen Cole. There we go.
That was a half good, half bad scene for me.
I mean, it
The
was
whole
do we agree
it
on what was
seems
bad?
it was weird how all of a sudden Gwaine's like, "Oh, you're fucking my sister." And it just seems like I don't know where I saw, you know, like obviously he had her favor or whatever, and he was like looking at it, but it just seemed like there should have been more build up to that, and it felt out of nowhere. What I did like about it was Kristen Cole being like nihilistic, like I don't have any philosophy, like what the fuck does it matter if the dragons are just like these insane killing machines were fodder. You know, that I love.
I agree on both fronts on that, where like the beginning of the scene, I really it doesn't make sense to me because Gawain being like, "I'm gonna yell about my sister sleeping with you," that's a really sensible thing to do in front of my soldiers to say that the queen whose entire banner is based on chastity, I'm accusing her sworn white knight of having sex with her loud enough that half of the army can hear with my sword out at his throat. And then it just kind of goes to like a really good conversation about nihilism and like what is a foot soldier in comparison to nukes, and like what is like just coming to terms with the fact that he's like, you know, he's maybe not as white knight as he should be, and he does have guilt, but he has knightly denial and all of that jazz. But just the fact that it started the scene with like, "Hey, stop fucking my sister, who's also the queen, and I shouldn't ever say to anyone that she's totally having sex with you because that ruins both your reputations." Seemed real stupid.
I understand. I get that. Like, yes, it is a bit unusual. Like, it's a bit unusual. It was a bit odd
Not
to like start the scene like
unusual.
that. But it's like, because he's there, he's looking at the handkerchief. He's having a good old sniff. And then boom, sword at his back. Part of me thinks that that was a little bit like half jokey. Like, it's just a boys being boys a little bit, where he's like, he's he I don't think he's super serious, because Or like, because he's not going to win against a fight with Christian Cole. Christian Cole is one of the probably the best swordsmen around at the time, I would imagine.
I
And
mean, you've kind of got to be super serious if you're going to put a sword against a master swordsman's throat. Even if you're like joking around with the
it's
boys,
the
like that guy
army,
can
isn't it?
literally murder you. Yeah.
It's I but maybe I but yes, I the
Like,
thing
we
that
know
the
how shady Christian Cole is. Like putting your sword to his throat is just like, hey, come kill me, dude. And also being like, hey, you've soiled your white cloak by fucking my sister. Like that's literally being like, hey, I have like a really good place to stab, like between here to here. Do you wanna just give it a go, Crystal?
And also, but the thing I think what they wanted to depict in the scene was how Christian Cole, like the Christian Cole's nihilism of like, well, you go ahead and kill me now if you want. I'm going to die now, or I'm going to die later. It's all the fucking same to me. I think that was
Yeah,
what
I'm
they,
already
and
dust.
I and maybe they just fluffed the build up to it. But
Like the idea of him cherishing a favor throws back to season one and like favors and ladies and knights and the stories we tell about ladies and knights and favors and you know, I carry your heart with me because I have your favor. And so I think the implication of him having the obvious favor that we've had at least two scenes, if not three scenes, in the courtyard with Alicent flirting with Kristen or having intimate moments with Kristen with Gawain looking over. So I think there was enough build up for him to have worked it out.
Gawain knows, like that. That's why I think it's
Yeah,
like
he
a,
knows.
not super serious, because or he was just waiting for Christian Cole to put the sword down because that's the only way he's ever going to stand a chance.
That I believe more.
But I yeah, like I think it would. The scene was supposed to be there more to focus on Christian Cole than it was anything to do with Gawain Hightower. But then he, the way that Kristen then talks about, well, this is going to soil your name as much as mine, or Otto's name as much as mine, or Alicent's as much as mine. Like I'm just a lowly Kingsguard from Dorne. Like I'm a man of no consequence whatsoever. You kill me, the history books might not even make a record of it, but it will besmirch your family name. And what I really quite enjoyed was he kind of dropped into some freestyle war poetry, which kind of had a little bit like, you know, like World War One-y kind of sort of type of
I
nihilism to
mean,
it.
it was very, again, if we're like the nuclear metaphor has been consistent and continuous. And so we have like, again, Rhaenyra being like, I was hoping that having these dragons would be a deterrent. She says that again in this episode. And then Kristen goes into this whole thing about, you know, if I, like, what am I? Like, if all I believe in, all I have faith in is the sword. What is a sword against a dragon? Like what is a handgun versus the nuke? Like what is a bayonet versus a cannon fire? Like we're in the next generation of warfare. What does that mean for me who only knows this tier of warfare? And so it is very, you know, Oppenheimer,
Yeah, and we just
you
watched
know.
Oppenheimer, but with dragons. That's all.
Yes. I mean, I've not seen Oppenheimer, so I can't speak to it.
It's such a good movie. You gotta see it. Cillian
It's all right,
Murphy.
yeah.
Yeah.
Have we got more? What do we make of the scene with Alicent being snuck in and actually like sort of the high stakes negotiation of what of let getting Rhaenyra back on the throne, Rhaenyra back on the throne.
I enjoyed, like, again, I don't get how, like, the logistics involved in smuggling queens into
Yeah, I don't
places
buy
where
it.
other queens are in charge, like, between the Nun, like, the Operation Nun and this one, like, who is keeping an eye on these women? Like,
Yeah, it's
it's.
stretching my imagination, like my believability, like way too far. Like
Like.
for it to
If
happen
Alicent can
twice.
get into Rhaenyra's castle without anyone knowing about it, who's to stop another assassin? Like
Okay,
it just like I'm
I can
put it
ex
aside for the sake of good drama, but it is one of those things that both times I've been like, this is logistically nonsensical.
Now, I don't. I it makes perfect sense to me, partly because she's a woman and is of no threat. Well, is in within the sort of the narrative of patriarchy in this world. Like, and also she is known as Alicent Hightower. Like, no one's going to put a sword to her. Like,
She's the queen of the green. Like, they would at least, like, if any of the soldiers in Rhaenyra's court or
she's the
would have
Dowager
gone
Queen.
Well, she's
She's
Dowager.
not the queen.
And
Well,
she's
she's still an important political,
no, she's not.
like if they,
Not
she
according to
is,
her
she's
son.
been, well, they don't know that. Like honestly, as a political pawn, she's still a very valuable target. The Queen Mother. Like the Queen Mother
Oh,
twice
yeah.
over. Like,
Well, I
let's be
mean,
honest, the Queen
yeah,
Mother
but
of both the Queen and the King.
the so in from King's Landing she can go wherever she wants, right? We know this because of the episode before. She just went out with one
Yeah,
Kingsguard,
the camping trip.
the camping trip. So she would have had no problem leaving King's Landing, and in reality she arrives on the shores of Dragonstone. They'll like none of the house guards really like it's a woman and maybe Orwell or like a fishing someone. Like, they're
Yeah,
obviously
but like
not.
her sworn protector's wearing Kingsguard outfits, like full Kingsguard.
I mean, they're there. Like, they're probably more likely, and this might be a little bit of the class system as well at play, with her being the nobility. Like, they're probably much more likely, even the House Guard on Dragonstone are more likely to protect Alicent than they are to kill her, especially if it's just like, all right, I want to have a talk with the Queen. It's not like if it was a man with a sword, it would be different. But it's dainty Alicent Hightower who.
I mean, I think part of what's stretching my credibility is this is in Game of Thrones, in the era of Game of Thrones, when it's a time of war, it is shown that it is very dangerous to be a lone person. Like, you have Brienne traveling alone, and she is constantly attacked, and she is wearing armor and looks quite scary. And you have,
But
all of
Brienne
the trials and
is often
tribulations
mistaken
that
for a man.
Arya goes through. Well, she's not necessarily like a lot of people are like, cor blimey, that's a weird looking woman, but they do think of her as a woman and like as a lone traveler, like even as a set of two, like when she's with Jaime, she's attacked. Obviously, I think they recognize her, but like they have shown that traveling during a time of war is innately very, very dangerous, even in supposedly protected areas. And like, Bran on his own property when he is a child with multiple protectors around her is attacked by wildlings. And again, that's in the north, it's wild country, whatever. But I just like for me, having that constantly in the background of like the idea that traveling is innately
But
dangerous
she put her hood
and you
up, it's
have to be on
okay.
guard. Oh, she
Like,
put her hood.
she put
Sorry,
her hood
I
up.
forgot about that.
No, absolutely. Because,
Yeah,
like,
sorry.
Daemon does it as well.
Have
He
to be invisible as a cloak.
has his mischief hoodie. He puts the hood up. He can just go
But
straight
he
into
also
King's
has a
Landing.
dragon. Like, that's the thing. Like, he can travel by dragon. She's got to, like, sneak out of the castle and get in a boat and then get to. Again, I'm not going to labour too much on the point. It does stretch my credibility, but
I mean,
I did.
it's okay.
I.
We
It's not
can
enough
agree
to
to
ruin the
disagree.
scene.
I think
It's not enough to ruin the
to
scene.
me it's perfectly plausible because none of the House Guard know realistically the intricate politics of it. One highborn woman comes up. She's probably Alicent Hightower, fine, but she's alone. Probably by design.
Is
She's of no
covered
threat to
in.
anyone.
Yeah, but like, so what my concern is both. Okay, I think this is what the not only the logistics of traveling, but the thing that I think gets me is it's very clear that both the green and the black have very competent spy masters and very competent like insights into other places, and it seems highly unlikely that these two like seemingly very important figures, and yes, Alicent is theoretically a lot less powerful than Rhaenyra ever will be. Like Rhaenyra was already on a pedestal much higher above her, so maybe she has less observation than Rhaenyra. But like the idea that Alicent coming meeting with Rhaenyra in secret doesn't somehow get back to the Green Council just seems
Well, the green
so like it,
the Green Council's
I
in
mean, the Green
disarray
Council
right
is in
now.
shambles. Yeah, I suppose so.
Yeah, like I
It's,
mean
I just feel
it's
like someone will see something.
you've got Iron Rod, really. He's like the one left on the Green Council, right? You got well, all while he's doing the deed, right? You got Tywin Lannister, well, he's away in Essos. You got Larys, who is shifting Aegon out. To be honest, this is the
Sure.
perfect
Aemond,
time
who's
for
just
it.
being an
It's
arsehole.
Aemon's not even there.
Yeah, I
Like
suppose so.
he's oh no, yeah, no,
Of
Aemon's
burning
there, but
cities.
he's well, he is off burning
Just
cities and stuff like
harassing
that.
Helena.
I gotta be honest, like I mean if is it episode two where it's Operation Sister Act or whatever, like she's in I mean that's explained a little bit more, and I can understand that. I mean when I was looking at I was thinking, oh that yeah, those you put a habit on, you can pass for a nun, there's no problem.
The other thing
And then
is you
Damon
had
does it with a hoodie.
Aemond. You had Aemond looking down the port even more post bastard excursion. Like I
Yeah,
just,
but
there's just another thing where I'm like, like again.
the Red Keep that will have a secret dock. They all have. Do you know what I mean? Like it's
A secret talk.
yeah, like of course they could have a secret dock. In fact, they have the dock where Bronn and Jaime
Think
practice
that's what they
sword
call the
fighting.
whorehouse.
But yeah, no, so like where Jaime and Bronn were having their,
Yeah, I know.
it's.
It again, I think the point has been labored enough. It was something that kind of drew my attention away from the scene, but not enough to ruin the scene itself.
I mean, I'm glad just to see a scene where Alicent has a purpose, it's
Yeah, it's nice to have like she lost her drive for a considerable amount of time, and it's nice for her to have a new like motivation.
Yeah, it
And like a true motivation for the first time. All of the previous time she was governed by other people's motivation, and like it's a very boring, simple motivation, but to survive
Yeah.
is a good motivation. And I like the fact that she wants to be free, and that kind of plays back into Rhaenys's comment about do you want freedom or do you just want a bigger window in your wall? And I think part of her reaction to seeing Meleys dead and knowing Rhaenys is dead is kind of internalizing what Rhaenys said to her about that and about like what does she want? Like I think that's what Rhaenys was trying to impart on her. Like what do you want as a person? Like it's not necessarily that you want to be on the throne. It's not like what do you want? Like you need to start thinking about this as an adult woman. And it wasn't till all of this stuff has gone that Alicent has actually put aside the time to be like, oh, what I want is to camp out in the woods with my daughter and for us to all live.
Yeah. I
And
think
like,
it's going to be interesting to see the son being raised at Hightower. Was it Daeron?
hey, Ron. Be
Yeah,
nice to
because
meet him.
Gwaine says he's kind, and Helena's quite kind, and I think it might be the case. Because I did suggest quite a few episodes ago that Alicent might kill either Aegon or Daemon, Aemond.
Yes.
Because I don't know, I'm just getting that vibe of
She
like.
nodded. She nodded when Rhaenyra gave her the ultimatum. Like, you have to
Yeah,
choose
she
between
seemed
me or
to
him.
accept it.
And like it's interesting that this is the like part of her character progression to trying to find something of her own. Like the choice, like Rhaenyra is for the first time, probably in Alicent's life, saying, you have the choice, you have the power, you have the decision in this matter. Like you are the one with the authority to make the decision. Are you choosing me or are you choosing him? And leaving it to Alicent to decide. And I think that was part of like when Alicent was walking away from Rhaenyra, like it was like a like it was a power feeling for her. It was the first time she's really experienced like the authority of choice where she can make the decision. And that is like it's breaking that wall rather than just having a window. And like it's in comparison to like it has Rhaenyra saying, are you here for absolution? Which is what what she would have always wanted, what Alicent always sought, is like a little window and some absolution, another window and some absolution. And instead, what she actually got from her conversation with Rhaenyra was a choice which was her own. And
Yeah.
that's like quite nice.
Actually, that ties in very neatly with the scene from last episode with Viserys, where he talks about the crown crushes anyone who wears it, and it's a bit like Alicent now is feeling the weight of the power that she actually has, where she never really used to have really that much power because she was a woman, and a lot of the time on the
I mean,
council
she still is.
she still is a woman, and she's overridden. All her decisions are overridden on the council. Now, in this pivotal moment, she actually does have the power, and she feels absolutely crushed because this power is this kind of crushing thing. And but she also knows, really, that neither Aegon or Aemond really are. Like they're not re they I don't want to say they both like deserve to die, but it's certainly very understandable why in a situation of war they would be targets. Why basically Rhaenyra says it's like I have to kill him, like obviously, duh,
Yeah. And you know this. You know this. You're smart enough to know. And like these like there's an old saying from Game of Thrones, which is when a Targaryen is born, you toss a coin. And you have four children of Alicent, and two of them are not kind and two of them are kind. So yeah, I enjoyed that like that whole scene. And that was interesting as well with them we talked about with I mean I talked about because I talk too much in this
No.
podcast with Daemon's character arc, part of all of the repeated different visions basically telling him the same thing is about like character arcs aren't always linear. You've got to have step forwards and then step backs. And in this scene with Alicent and Rhaenyra, Alicent was very clearly driven to get there. And then she had a moment where she regressed and she started biting her nails again. And then
Yes.
she stepped back up. So it has that like regression and then step forward, regression and then step forward. Which it was a very small character quirk, but it's a very well established character quirk
I did notice
that
that
it
on the
was nice
rewatch,
to
yeah.
see. I also like the fact that she said something along the lines of like, don't shame me for what you've done. When she's actually talking about the fact that she has done Cole, and so did Rhaenyra. They're like sex siblings at this point, because they're both done with Cole.
And what's interesting is that Cole.
Eskimo sisters. Oh, I don't know if that's a PC term anymore.
It does seem that Alison and Kristen are kind of going on a very similar, maybe parallel journey about, how like the war and war never changes, etc. And
Well, and then also like where their authority, like what they have authority over and what they don't have authority over as well. I think they're both coming to the conclusion that, and I think Daemon as well. I think if one part of the main allegory for this episode was, is it all just a story? Are we bound by the stories people tell about us? Are we bound by how history will tell about us? And do we just tell stories about ourselves to describe ourselves? The other allegory is like what we have power to control. And so Daemon's final like step forward to coming back to Rhaenyra was he doesn't have control over fate, but he has control over what he can do and who he sides with. And Alicent has also realized she doesn't have power to govern the city or like to be the queen, but she can have power over her choices. For the first time, someone is saying, you have the power of choice. And I think Christian's coming to the revelation that he has no power when it comes to dragons, absolutely none, but he does have the power to acknowledge his own flaws a little bit
That's
and
very
what he
interesting, yeah.
cares about.
It's a bit
And
like a
so,
seesaw. Like so Kristen, before the dragons were used in warfare in this way, Kristen was powerful because he was one of the best swordsmen in the realm, then rising to the rank of Kingsguard. And of course in the patriarchal world, might makes right and all that kind of stuff, like Kristen was more powerful. Like he certainly felt powerful and was powerful. Whereas like when the tides shift, he actually kind of realized that he's marching towards his annihilation. Whereas Alicent, being very high up in the nobility for the longest time, but in reality, sort of feeling very like underpowered, I suppose, in so far that she's a woman, but now she's sort of been elevated into this position. She's been elevated and Kristen Cole's been de-elevated, whereas maybe the other way it might have been. I don't know if it was different, necessarily different the other way around earlier on, but like, yeah, it's, I don't know, it does seem that,
Yeah,
I don't know, they seem to,
it's always like when you're talking about arcs, there is if you're instigating character change and instigating plot change at the same time, there will be that sort of upswing, downswing, and that's where you get the fun.
One thing as well I really, really, really quite enjoyed. I think one of the reasons I didn't quite like this episode on first watch was because I was expecting some the I was it was all build up and build up and build up and build up and build up. And I was wondering, are we going to see this Battle of the Gullet? Because they keep talking about it through the whole season, so I'm thinking that's got to be the season payoff. But on the rewatch, the final montage where like Ulf and Adam were gearing up in their armor, where the armies were marching, you saw the Northmen come down from over the Twins. You saw Daemon and his army. You saw Baela and her running after Sheep Stealer, and intercut with Alicent walking away with the hood up. And then of course you saw Otto Hightower in prison.
Yeah, or like on a boat, maybe. Like I was like, Osha, what the fuck? Like,
I
what the heck is going on with Osha?
want to float a theory about that. I think it could be. We don't know where he's held, but the immediate thought that you might think is that he's being held by Laris, but he's not, because Laris is being carted away with Aegon. So
There's
I'm just
some
trying.
throwaway line I think that House Beesbury has him or something, but maybe I was wrong about that. But I remember seeing, I didn't notice it myself, but I remember seeing in one of the breakdown videos that
Oh, okay.
it might be House Beesbury, because the guy that
Like,
Kristen
okay, if
Cole
we're talking
killed at the end
about
of season
secret
one.
MVPs, like the Beesburys are the secret MVPs of this entire, like their revenge game is on point.
I think it's still vague enough that it might not be the Beesburys, but I think that was maybe the implication of might be who has him.
I think we're
I don't
supposed to
know.
think it's the Beesbreeze, right? Because that would be the most logical thing. They
I
take
think
the,
it's Missaria was the one that pinged into my brain.
and yeah, I
And she wouldn't have
Missaria.
brought him to Rhaenyra at yet. I get,
I think Missaria is still hiding some cards.
Could very well
Don't
be.
trust it.
I think though it's none of those. I think it's he is in the black cells in King's Landing, and I think he is being held by Aemond. So Aemond's gone a bit rogue. He is the Rogue Prince 2.0.
Yeah,
He
he's
was
definitely
burning. He
that.
burned that town down and everything like that. What's it?
Oh, he's being a basic jackass.
But of course, in the previous episode, we heard him and Laris talking about how that he's yet to pick a hand, and this was brought up by Laris. It was not brought up by Aemond. So Laris says, "You know, have you thought about a new hand?" And then Aemond is like, he almost he takes the bait, or he says, "Yeah, bring me Otto Hightower, right?" He doesn't instigate. So it's interesting that he doesn't instigate that conversation, but he immediately comes to a distinct like conclusion there and then. It might even be the case, and it might need to be done on a rewatch, where he doesn't actually say that he's going to choose Otto Hightower as his hand, just that bring me he might just say, "Bring me Otto Hightower, you're not going to be the hand, you toad," or something to that effect. So it could be the case that he's just being held by Aemond to consolidate his power.
I think
Because
he genuinely wants him to be his hand, though. I think Aemond sees, like,
I don't
looks up to his grandfather a little bit, like,
No, I don't think he
in
wants a
somewhat
hand.
of a way he looks up to his uncle.
I don't think he wants a hand. I think he wants to be a di like he wants to be a
He wants to
dictator.
have unlimited power.
Kind of, because he's basically like got a very small council. So
I thought you were going to say something else.
but at
<Might
least it still works.
be. laughs>
But yeah, no, he's got he's so it definitely looks to me like the clues are that he's consolidating his power, and he's completely gone rogue and ruthless. He has no regard whatsoever for, you know, he's willing to kill his brother, or certainly willing to like abuse him. He's got no regard whatsoever for Helena, and she's like the nicest out of them. He doesn't he's he took Alicent off the council, like he's just discarded her. So just because you are family has no bearing on whether or not Aemond's loyal to you whatsoever. And so I think he's the bait and switch in a way. Like I think he's got anyway, that's just what that's my prediction. Stamping that one in. Boom. Could be wrong,
Okay.
We'll see.
but
Maybe this is not mentioned in Fire and Blood at all, as far as I remember.
So yeah.
Otto being captive or anything.
But I but that final montage, I loved how they embedded in all the different melodies from the
Yeah,
different
I've got
houses.
like
You
shout outs, and I was like, the light. I wish I had a better understanding of music form to understand the like progression of that music theme, because like they had multiple leitmotifs, and I learned the term leitmotifs, and I'm just going to continue using them because I enjoy that as a term. Like character or plot themes rolling through. So they had obviously when the Targaryen, not Targaryens, when the
Lannisters.
Lannisters were making the move, obviously that was the most obvious leitmotif. That's the, you know,
Right, yeah.
The Reigns of Castamere, but they also had like the like kind of repeated like oral notes. It's like the Targaryen like emotion tension, where it's like the lull, like it's like a sort of like
That's
choral thing,
Rhaenyra's theme. Yeah.
Rhaenyra's theme, and they also had the piano to start off. And again, I wish I had a better comprehension of music theory to really appreciate it. I really enjoyed it. But I felt like a dum-dum as I enjoyed it, because I felt like it was more complex than I was able to comprehend.
Knowing
That
where it
was
goes.
that,
Sorry, Max.
I was pissed that we only saw the Starks for in the Greybeards for like 5 seconds.
Yeah,
Yeah.
hopefully we'll get more of them next season. I mean, they've had a
Yeah,
long walk.
I need more Cregan Stark. We need Cregan Stark up in here.
I
More
did
Helena, more
see
Cregan.
a
More
deleted
Meat Grease.
scene where Craegan Stark was actually going across the Twins with the Northmen. So it's like the exact same scene that we saw the Northmen go over the Twins, but he was at the front of it. I don't know if they CGI'd him out or they just did two takes, you know, one with him, one without, and they use whatever they want in post. Because I think some people were saying, yeah, it would be kind of silly if he literally actually led them out right there.
Yeah,
Maybe not,
the whole
maybe,
point
I
with
don't know.
sending the Greybeards was to send the Greybeards. Like, he's got duty. I start from a stay in Winterfell.
And I like the fact that like they're not bringing horses with them, and it that kind of lines in with the fact that, as I understand it, and I don't know if this is a change or whatever, that Greybeards are sort of almost being sent to their death, so that it's one less mouth to feed at home, because they're
Well,
old, you
I'm
know.
also
Yeah,
assuming
winter's
there's
coming.
like it's one less mouth to feed, and also like the Stark's comprehension, or the North's comprehension of Valhalla, it's better to go out fighting than to be like to go out in sickness or age.
Yeah.
So yeah,
So that's kind of cool.
I
I do
enjoyed it.
like that. The twins in the in House of the Dragon look really cool. I love.
Like Yeah,
another one of
that's
my
cool.
shout outs is just some of the like location shoots, not the interior, like the like the dragon view of the locations to get you
Chef's
that
kiss.
sense of like all geography. Oh, so good. Like it's in one of my shout out notes. We've already talked about the
Absolutely.
costumes. Like I really love the costumes in terms of the dragon armor, all the different dragon armor for the different new riders was cool. Like the armor for the Valyrians was
Love it.
cool. We've already talked about the different colored beards. That was really nice. The costumes were very piratey, obviously, as well for that particular group. Also, the smocking on Rhaenyra's nightgown was amazing, and smocking is a skill, and I love it. Also, I like that they put her in like really warm looking gowns. Like she looks like she's comfortable. I like it.
Yeah, it's a lot better than Brienne of Tarth's fucking bathrobe in season 8.
Well, that was designed to be as ugly as possible.
But it was just a bathrobe, like,
Oh,
come
sorry, I thought you were talking
on.
about her pink dress from season one. No, you're talking about. Let's not talk about Game of Thrones season eight.
Sorry, Max, it's upsetting him. One scene we
Thank you for your consideration.
one scene we haven't, I don't think we've covered it, is the Corlys and Alan scene.
No, we have not yet.
I like again the start, the rich blue costumes are just wonderful. But when I first watched this, I thought that was very soap opery, but on rewatch, I think I kind of get it now.
I get it. I mean, like the way I would justify it, and again, I also even on rewatch, I was like, I skipped it on rewatch. I'll be entirely honest. I was a bit like, I don't really have time to rewatch this scene. It's daddy issues. I did enjoy. I got that we've been saying all the way through that this guy has no personality and is so stoic and has no like emotional range, and so it was meant to be the bomb going off. It was meant to be the final crack in the wall that broke down the dam, and then you get a big wave of daddy issues. And in all fairness, not only is he having resentment from having daddy issues, he's also basically being treated like a rebound child. Like Corlys has lost his children and he's lost his grandchildren, so now he's like, oh, we all do. And like I can like from Alan's perspective, that's like a proper fuck you. Like that's a real like you don't even realize that you're doing it, and that's shitty. So I get the emotional motivation, even though, as I said, yeah, I did find it a bit too separate for me to really like give it too much credit.
It made it make sense. And it gives some sort of arc and development for when I assume Alan inherits the Driftwood throne, or you know, becomes the.
Well, I thought it was like a rebuttal to him not ever going to take the Driftwood throne. So it kind of, for me, it was one of those things where Corlys has been like, it's okay, I have a backup. It's okay, I have a backup. Oh, even Baelor doesn't want to be my backup. I've lost my wife. Okay, I have my final backup. He will be my heir. I still have the most important thing up to this point has been the fact that I will have lineage. And then the final nail in the coffin is even his bastard is like, fuck you, Corlys. I don't want Driftmark. I don't want anything to do with you. And now Corlys is going into a life and death battle. And so I like, unless something changes during the combat, I wouldn't put this as like a nail in the coffin for him just being like, well, fuck it, I quit. Like, that's how I read the scene. It's like him finally getting like, he's all of his life, he's been like, oh yeah, Rhaenys, you should be queen, but also I'm not going to listen to you when you say the most important thing is family, and I'm going to fuck off and do my own thing, but I'm going to say it's for you, and I think it's for you, but actually, if I really cared about you, maybe I'd spend more time at home. And then he loses her. And then all he cares about is family lineage, and then he was willing to like compromise and accept what are clearly bastards because he cared more about his family name than about his actual genetics. And then by the time he realizes he's got granddaughters, they don't care anymore. And then by the time he's finally reached out to his bastards, they don't care anymore. And so, like, his entire house of cards, his castle in the sand, is just being washed away. Like, it could make him very fearsome in battle, or it could make him a liability.
See, this is interesting actually, because this, I suppose, and I don't know this off the top of my head, could this be the end of House Velaryon then? Could this be, Alyn's refusal to take on the house, be the, like you say, like it could just be, that could be
I
it.
mean, are there any heirs left? Unless I don't know what happens with Baela and Rain. Like, so far they haven't seemed to get to the bedding. They haven't been married yet.
So
Like,
in the book, in Fire and Blood, Vaemond, the guy that Vaemond cut his
the
head off.
brother slash nephew. Is he nephew in the books and he's
Brother
cousin in
slash nep
the?
in it, yeah, he's a nephew or cousin or something in the book.
Yeah.
He has children that are still alive.
Okay.
All right, so there's still a name about.
But
Okay.
by the time we get to Game of Thrones, there's no Valyrians left, is there?
We are
None in the story, at least. I don't think. I think they're. I yeah. I don't know how they die out, but I think they do.
Targaryens are considered the last of old Valyria.
Is like Driftmark is considered a like. I'm just trying to think. Like the Valyrians, like they're not. They're a bit like the Hightowers in that they're not like, is it vassal lords or whatever it is? They're not in charge of like a region. I mean, there's Driftmark and then there's Old Town, which they're not regions. They're more like, well, one's an island, one's a city, right? So, like, in terms of the political hierarchy, the Valyrians are quite like they're quite low down. But in terms of status, i.e., them being from Old Valyria plus. Corlys making the house incredibly wealthy kind of elevates their status, right?
And I think they've,
Yeah,
like,
if
genetic
you had it.
history, they've married into the Targaryen dynasty more than once, I think.
Yeah. So they're obviously like by marriage, they're obviously a very powerful and influential house. But
But
that's
in
more
terms of
like,
own property, they don't really have
yeah.
land or holdings. They own authority over the ocean because they're great sailors, and they own great wealth because they're great sailors. They don't necessarily have like land holdings in the same way as other lords may.
Yeah, we
They don't
don't
really
see
have
them.
vassals. They have an armada.
Yeah, it's a little different, I guess. It's a little bit like is it Thunderbird 4? The underwater one. They're the Thunderbird 4. Wow, what a dated reference that is. Crikey.
Sixties when you reference back.
Wow, that's it. I don't know. I missed it as a
Oh my
kid.
gosh. I mean, in all
Loved the
fairness, I've watched
Thunderbird series.
Thunderbird. I love Thunderbirds. Like, Max, do you have any comprehension
No,
that
I
fly?
gotta say,
Have you seen Team
I'm
America?
Googling right now. Oh yeah, of course.
So Team America is a parody of the old series like Thunderbirds and what's the one with the mermaids?
Oh, Captain Scarlet.
No, Captain Scarlet is the one with the immortal. There's one with the mermaids. It's like, oh,
That's Captain Scarlet. There's mermaids in Captain
They're
Scarlet.
separate series. They're separate series.
So what,
Well,
like would like marionette, like little marionette
yeah, little
puppets? That's the ones.
marionettes with their like weird movements, and they go and save the world. And yeah.
Oh, also
Anyway,
another scene we haven't
back to Game of
we
Thrones, House of Dragon.
there's a lot to this. There's a lot to this
There's a
episode.
lot
Who's
going
Team
on in this
Americans
episode.
said?
Is this the longest podcast we've ever done?
No, we got one that's 3.5 hours
No.
under our belt. The one I think the one scene that we yeah so it's Jace and Ulf and Hugh the Hammer.
I've got Jason the Bastard. Yeah.
Yeah,
Sounds like a good
and
band.
Jason the Bastard. And obviously this is probably one of the lesser interesting bits because this is clearly just a bit of story to acclimatize the Dragon Riders with the Targaryens a little bit. And I do know that actually I won't go into that particular spoiler, but you can see that Jace is a little bit at odds with the common folk learning to ride dragons because he feels like it delegitimizes himself as a Targaryen and
I
the heir to
mean,
the throne.
they made the subtext text.
Yes. And there's even a scene where they're having dinner and like Ulf's like, oh, let's have more of these little birds. And I love at the end of that scene where he's like he just says birds. Like that's like all he's here for.
I like the fact that he's willing to sass Rhaenyra back. And they don't quite have a retort because they've given them power. Like it's like I have just done a refresher on management training for my work, and it is a very difficult circumstance to be in where you've granted someone you don't really think is suitable for a position of authority. And so what do you do if their behavior is a problem? Because you can't take the authority, you can't demote them, but you can't change personality. You can change actions, but you can't change personality if you think someone's conduct is wrong. So they can say, learn to ride your dragons better, but they don't necessarily have the authority to be like, manners at the table, pretty please, thank you very much, without then giving them more power as bribery. And like, I relate to the Rhaenyra, like, oh fuck, what have I done giving this person that be perfect for the role and a position of authority, and now I've made my bed and I have to just sleep.
Well, this is the peril, and this is the consequences of the risky play that she's made with the dragons. I'll,
At least she owns it.
yeah, so because we know Adam is legit, and we even establish as much that he's legit.
I
Everything about
really
his
enjoy
character.
that between the three bastards, they have very different personalities and very different motivations.
Yeah, I like Adam as a character. I wish we had more of him on screen, to be honest. I wish we had more of his character arc,
Me too.
especially because he is distinct from Alan. So they are, of course, they're brothers. They grew up poor together, and you got Alan, who is resentful of Corlys, and you got Adam, who seems to be he's very much the younger brother of this, in that he's like he's fine with just validation. He's just happy to be there. Like he's looking for acceptance. He's just grateful that he's not, working the hard graft that he used to.
Wait,
So I.
are you saying that there's a relationship between brothers in this show that has good metaphor and strife?
Exactly.
I've never seen that before in this program.
So I like, yeah. Well, we needed to replace Arik and Eric, didn't we? In terms of,
And you know,
and
he makes a very good replacement for Nettles, in all fairness. Because one of the things I was thinking about since last week is Nettles actually the role that she plays in terms of plot, from my understanding, is not that important. But she is a fan favorite. But the reason why she's a fan favorite, at least in part, is because she was one of the very, like, name it on your hand, named characters of color in the original Game of Thrones book. or in the Game of Thrones, Song of Ice and Fire lore, at least by George R. R.'s description. And part of, at least in part, the reason why she was so important and well loved is because of that aspect of her characterization and her description. Now, again, I'm not going to speak for any communities that might particularly love her for other reasons, but the two as the primary aspects of her character is she was a female black woman who was a dragon rider who was lowborn, and so they've covered a lot of loops with giving more representation to other characters. So I do understand the hurt in losing Nettles, but Rayna does fulfill two out of three of those descriptions. The only thing that she's lacking is being lowborn.
I mean,
Can we talk about Raina in
The
this
two out of three.
episode? Is there anything to say about Raynor in
It
sorry.
was like, that bit in Monty Python and the Holy Grail where the guards are like watching them come up in the distance running at them, and each time they cut back, they're further away. It felt like that. Like, come on, get on with it.
I will read out my notes verbatim. Do 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 Rayna and Sheep Stealer. Do 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 do.
I like
That's
Sheep Stealer. Looks good.
literally my note. I like the design, and I like the fact that if we're talking about, there's been a continuous follow through of, at least to an extent, the dragons' descriptions and personalities matching the descriptions and personalities of their riders. So Daemon is a weird, slightly freaky dude with a weird, slightly freaky dragon, and Rhaena, Meleys and Rhaenys, like the queen with the Red Queen, like that's good pairings. I like I will the one credit I'll give to that scene is like the unloved and neglected dragon. One who's been starved for affection and starved for care is found by the girl who is starved for affection and starved for care. And I will give credit for that. That is a nice little like sprinkling of sugar on what was basically a meh cake.
Yeah, and it didn't need to span out as much. Like, they could have done more with it. What would have, and maybe this is a budget constraint. I always sort of use the budget constraints to make excuses for dragons here, because it does seem that there's a lot there. But it would have been great if earlier on Rhaenyra had found Sheep Stealer, and there were a few scenes of her bonding with the dragon, and learn, and we could have used that as a mechanism to learn how, more long-term bonding of the dragon takes place, or something like that. Probably would have been quite
We can have a
expensive
proper
though.
how to train situation. And in comparison, like Baela and her characterization is so strong. Like her scene with Jace was just she like every time she's on screen, I'm like, I am fully aware the likelihood of her actually becoming queen is zero. But every time she's on screen, I'm like, she is really smart and empathetic and understands the political understanding of the whole thing and still is like, actually, I understand what's important right now. Like the fact that she's like, you think it diminishes you? Well, what about me? Like, does it diminish me? No. Like, you are still the heir, you are still the most important person, and you sulking about it is not helping anything. I really love Baela. I think Rhaena, hopefully she can get a personality at some point, like Alan.
I think Baela's like a great screen presence. The chemistry between her and Jace is really good as well. They actually seem like a really nice couple, to be honest. They seem like
Really lovely,
there's some good parallels a little bit. Well, I'll be careful with the term good parallels, but there's a little bit of Corlys and Rhaenys energy.
I think
Is it
they've
Rhaeny?
like I think Baela's grown up with Rhaenys as an authority figure, and so having that understanding that relationships, even if they aren't perfect, should have equality or have communication is like a really nice thing for her to have seen, because she doesn't really see that from, and like she would have seen her mother and her father being loving as well, to a certain extent. So yeah, I like, she seems like a very well-adjusted character, which in this world is few and far between.
Remarkably well adjusted is
Remarkably well-adjusted.
Yeah, so but I yeah, I kind of wish they did more with her because I'd like to have seen her more on screen, and maybe I'd like to have seen her not be a sounding board for someone else's exposition. I feel like there's been very little, like it would have been cool, like considering the amount of time that Matt Smith got, like cut some of that and give it to some of the more
Yeah,
like
give it to the younger generation. Like,
yeah.
I really want to get to know, like, particularly because we had the age up as well with that casting. Like, we barely got to know them last season at all. We got, what, two episodes with them, maybe?
Something like that, yeah.
Like, so, like, it would have been good to have slightly more of the younger generation, but presumably the older generation will soon all die off, so.
And I was expecting more of a jump forward as well because
The
yeah, some of
timeline seemed very squiffy.
Yeah, my sis, what I as I understand it, could easily be wrong here, and I, but it could be that season three is just basically wall to wall battles, and then there's a time jump for season four. That would be sort of what I, as I understand it, might be going on, or there could be a big time jump halfway through season three, a whole bunch of battles, and then.
Specifically, in this episode, we had Kynan arriving, having his whole thing, and then presumably make his way back the next day, which obviously there's ship travel. We had specifically Rhaenyra say, "We attack the strongholds in 2 days," and then it had Alicent arriving and saying, "Come to King's Landing in 3 days." And
So I'm
so,
assuming.
like, I don't know what the timeline is. Is this all happening in the course of like a fortnight?
Well,
The whole of
the
season two?
season two
Season
began.
two is a couple months. Takes over place over a couple months, I think.
It feels
It's
like it would take place a couple of months, yeah. But the beginning of season two was only a very short time after season one.
yeah, well, we're kind of saying it's about a fortnight.
Fortnite sounds about right, yeah. So I would imagine that the beginning of season three is basically going to be pretty soon after where season two left off. Like it's pretty gonna be pretty
Yeah.
continual, I think.
I don't see a natural place for them to put a time jump anytime soon, except for the fact that they're gonna have to age up Rhaenyra and Daemon's kids eventually. So they're gonna have to invent
Well, that's
way
inevitable
for a
for a
time jump.
reason.
It might just come halfway through a season for all we know.
Yeah.
Right, have we explored all the scenes?
I've got a couple of quick ones. I think it's mostly just highlighting stuff that have already come to pass. So, Mysyria seems to be on the, like, you've been blessed by the gods train. She didn't seem to be kind of on it last episode, where Rhaenyra was like, "Oh my gosh, I've been blessed by the gods that we have managed to find these riders," and Missaria was like, "I'm just gonna hover in the background." And this episode, she was like, "Yeah, you've been blessed by the gods." So that. Like, I don't know how much of that I really, for some reason, I just don't trust her at all. So I don't know whether or not that is genuine, like she's come round on the idea, or whether or not she is cottoned on to that's what Rhaenyra wants to hear, so that's what she's feeding back to her. There was also a shot where Rhaenyra says, "Who will pay the price?" and then it panned back onto the bastards riding their dragons, which has gone into my theory that hopefully. Like, part of the intention is to use the bastards as fodder against Vhagar, and if they die, they die. Which she needs to explain to Jace, because there was a whole scene where she chose Adam to come with her to Harrenhal instead of Jace, and so Jace's jealousy is being exacerbated instead of saying, "Hey, Jace, part of the reason why I'm bringing the bastards is because of my diamond, and also I want to keep you safe."
That's
Like,
totally like yeah, you don't bring the heir with you on the like if both of you get
yeah,
shot
the
out of the
queen and the
sky.
heir should not go together.
Like
Like, you
in real
know.
life, the royal family do not fly on the airplane together. They have separate airplanes for just that reason as well.
Exactly. But she needs to just
The
have that
captain, first
conversation.
officer, like to make a Star Trek analogy, Picard and Riker don't go on a mission together and win a
Exactly,
mission
yeah.
together, you know.
You know, she needs to just have that conversation with Jace and say, this is why, because otherwise he's thinking that she's favoring him, which is not really the case. But you know, it's just so Jace can get drama, but it's just one of those things. For the Aegon escape, I just made a couple of notes where the specific wording that Laris uses, like the king, the true king returning from the ashes and all of those sort of things, sounded very much like Viserys, as in brother to Dany Viserys. He's like, oh, when we arrive back in King's Landing, you and me will be praised as the returning king, and all of those sort of things. And it again plays into the theme of like, what are the stories that we tell to ourselves? What will the books remember? What will the stories remember? And like, it had Aegon also saying, he will be the realm's delight, which was obviously Rhaenyra's title. Which, you know, part of it I think was obviously, you know, self-deprecation. Also, part of it was like, what story shall we tell for ourselves that we are the realm's delight? I also enjoyed the fact that he said, why must I run? I'm, you know, I'm a king, why must I run? And that was like talking about physically moving, like walking, running, but then obviously he runs away at the end. And
Delivery on
the
that was
last part.
amazing though. And also when Laris was
Yeah.
like, yeah, because your brother's going to kill you, like his reaction to that was just like, oh, well,
Yeah.
yeah, I guess you got me there.
Yeah. Yeah, you got me there. It's gonna happen. And the last point on my notes is I really liked the shot of Rhaenyra through the bookcase in the like the diamond crisscross during the montage. Because A, it looked like she was, you know, looking through the walls of a prison. And B, that is a bunch of storied scrolls and scrolls of history, and it goes into the metaphor of the episode about it being like memoried histories. Like she's now being pigeonholed literally into an arc of history, and how will history remember her now she's made the decision she has? And I just like, honestly, every frame of painting, like the visuals in this episode,
Love them.
awesome. And that was one of my favorite visuals. And
Yeah.
that's the end of my notes.
Yeah. I mean, like I go back to what I said at the beginning, it's like if this had been a non-finale episode, to be honest, would have kind of loved it really. I mean, I know that it sort of drags out stuff that was already dragged out, but what, all that kind of stuff was part of it.
I will defend this season in that I'd rather have slow, drawn out, well-written character arcs than what we had at the tail end of Thrones. That will be my primary defense of this season, which is admittedly slow.
I mean, I'm okay with it. It's just waiting for 2 years. If season three sticks the landing, all is forgiven. But 2 years, and I hope
I
Duncan
know,
Egg's
2 years
good.
is bad. I hope so too.
What
Look
about
forward to
you,
talking about
Max?
that.
Do you have any
What?
final thoughts?
Yeah, I thought, during at the beginning of the season or like a couple episodes in, I thought this could like be match the first season or maybe even be better. But I definitely see that there was a clear, to me, there's a clear drop off in quality in the season. I think it has to do with production issues and the writer's strike or something. So I'm really hoping that they can move past all that. And because it's not like it wasn't bad by any means. It's just didn't live up to the standard that I thought that it should. I think they can totally get it back on track for season three. So I'm still excited to see what they do.
There is something about this season that felt like it might have been hindered by things that we're not aware of. Maybe I know that HBO was slashing budgets. Maybe that had something to do with it. Writer's strike might have had something to do with it. It might be like knock-on effects from the writer's strike. The writer's strike might have caused a delay here, which might have added, which might have caused some sort of, it's a whole industry, that
Yeah.
we're not privy to. So
Yeah.
it may be, it could be the case. And also, the thing is with HBO, right? They're kind of struggling for property, intellectual properties right now. Like, they should be throwing everything at House of the Dragon, because, like, what else have they really got? So,
I kind of, the
yeah.
way I'm translating it is it's kind of season one to season two are almost different medias. In that season one feels like a prologue. You have a lot of, you have character jumps, you have really like so many years pass in season one. Season one covers what, 16 years at least? 17 years? If we're saying that Jace is old enough to be
They've
like
got like
17,
20 years.
18.
Like, it's
Yeah,
like, yeah, like.
if he, like, from like just going from the age of the now grown adults, like if we say that Jace is 20 years old, and we say that Rhaenyra was like 17, 18, like she was 15 when she, yeah. So like if we're saying like that's been, a long time, like that's a lot of time to travel. So it felt like a kind of prologue. It felt like a almost a cold open for the story of the House of the Dragon. While chapter th this felt like the first true chapter, which admittedly was slower. But if you're comparing a what we're saying 3 month character piece versus a 25 year setup. Like it's going to feel different, and I didn't hate the change. There was plenty of stuff to nibble on, but I do feel again, and I stop saying that I prefer it being slow and well thought out than being scrambled to get it finished.
I mean,
But I really that will be my primary forgiveness for this series is that
yeah.
like I'd
That's
rather have a
definitely.
lot of scenes of Daemon hallucinating than him immediately just being like, oh yeah, I'm just gonna give up on my, 40 years of life deciding that I wanted to be king and let Rhaenyra be queen, sure, whatever.
Yeah, I think the one of the things that I felt disconnected me from season one was the time jumps. Like, I felt like there was so much change in between the characters over time that I felt like it was you're not, I didn't feel like I was connecting with them in the same way that I was with characters in Game of Thrones, and I think this does remedy it. And it also does have the levity that is nice that I was hoping to bring back. So I gotta be honest, like, I actually kind of like season two over season one, just because it feels like the story does feel like it flows a little better. But yeah, it's just the blue balls. This is the vast majority of it for me.
Yeah, it's just, I guess, a lot of that is in my mouth.
They're such different beasts,
I'm gonna
right? I
go
need
back
high
and
bits of
rewatch this
distance to get
season.
an idea. Yeah. I think I need a rewatch.
Cool. All right, should we wrap it up?
It was
Yeah.
fun.
All right. Thank you everyone for joining us.
Thank you for watching slash listening.
Leave your comments. There were some good comments last week about Nettles. Some were in favor, some were fine with the cut, some didn't agree with the cut, but it's yeah,
Oh,
it is what it
I
is, right?
did get sent a personal DM from someone who had just watched the whole of season one and the whole of season two, who was wondering why Otto came back to being the Hand after Rhaenyra basically got him fired in season one. And I think the answer to that is because she left court. She basically was like, fuck it, it's too hot here, I'm like too much stress, I'm going away to Dragonstone. And so while she was off, Alicent used her influence to get her dad back in power. Like, that's the answer to that one.
Cool. All right. Thank you everyone for joining us, and we'll see you in 2 years or whenever we do another thing. All right.
We've got to do
Oh,
Duncan
next
Egg.
year for Duncan Egg. Duncan Egg.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that. So yeah, I got to apologize. I've got Knight of the Seven Kingdoms up there, so I'm going to give that a reread. And yeah, cool. All right, toodaloo, everybody.
Okey
Bye.
Bye.